Sunday, May 17th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl spends time with pianist, keyboardist, producer, and composer Mark Carey. Join us as we discuss Mark's career and his latest release, Roads Ahead, Volume 2. That's Sunday, May 17th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and tonight, although we are in the spring fundraising mode, I'm going to present a program. We were preempted a couple of weeks ago, so the fund drive could start early, but we brought Mark Carey back, our guest for this evening, composer, pianist, and arranger, all around pretty talented guy. So stay tuned. If you believe that WBAI should continue to stay on the air, we'll need your assistance by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Stay tuned. In my bowl, I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. My bow.
Hi, my name is Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Mark Carey.
Mark Carey, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl again.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Don't know whether you remember, I had interviewed you at the Blue Note after, I guess it was Will Calhoun, and we were talking about Abby Lincoln.
Yep, indeed I do.
We're going to talk about her later, but we have to start from the beginning. I understand you're actually a New Yorker who moved to D.C. when you were a child?
Yes, well, my parents moved around. I was born in New York. My parents are from Providence, Rhode Island. So at that time that I was born, they weren't married. So they were sent out of town to have me.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how that happened. But we moved back to Providence for a short time and then to D.C. And that's where I cut my teeth in D.C.
I may be skipping along, but it appears that you played with a band that played go-go, High Integrity Band?
High Integrity Band and Show.
What does that mean? You put on a show?
Well, we performed and we had dances. We had cats on unicycles that would rock to the beat. Man, it was a whole thing. Acrobats. Like, at that time, entertainment was not just one thing. And playing go-go was about a community thing. So you brought all the elements together really in one spot.
I take it this was after high school and what have you?
No, this was during that. I started my band when I was 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was, I went in the Battle of the Bands at 14.
Oh, wow.
I got some of the plaques here, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at the chronology and thought, wait a minute, am I confused or what's going on?
No. This is how it goes, yeah.
Excellent.
D.C. was the best, the hippest thing to do was to be a musician. It's either that or sports, you know. I mean, that's pretty much everywhere. But because we had indigenous music in D.C., everybody could be a part of it. You had to go to school to do it. I mean, you had to learn your instrument. That's the thing. And go-go is about musicianship and working together in a group, and everyone has parts. So everybody doesn't get to shine in the band, but everybody gets to shine doing their part. You don't get solos and all of that. It's a polyrhythmic form that depends on everybody playing their part correctly and swinging. That's what I love about that. Where you would get a drum machine do it, in D.C., we get a cat to play the cowbell.
Okay.
And we get a guy to play the tambourine.
Excellent. Excellent.
You know, yeah.
As part of my research, I noticed that you learned how to play this music, or, quote, jazz, unquote, with Let 'Em Play. It was a city-run public arts program?
Yes, thanks to, and rest in peace, Mayor Barry. He was very influential on the youth at that time. He made a lot of opportunities for us in regards to summer programs. We always had something to do during the summer because of him. One of the things that I found interesting was Let 'Em Play, because what was fascinating about it was a stage that traveled around the city.
And, it was like Jazzmobile.
A lot like Jazzmobile, except there was a program. So we were the act.
Oh.
You know, so we would have to get our skills up in about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Know.
Yeah, and then the rest of the summer we'd spend traveling around the city.
Oh, so Let 'Em Play was one act?
Yeah. You know, there were several stages that they had. They had the older stage with the older bands, but they had go-go stages. They had different kind of programs like that. I chose the jazz program. And we'd end up in all the communities up in the projects. You might see us anywhere. At a mall, at a school, behind the schoolyard. You know, there was music everywhere. And so that's how I learned music, because I was exposed to these stages that would travel. And then at that time, music was such a big part of our living. Every Friday after school, most schools would have a dance, and either in the auditorium or in the back of the school, a go-go band would set up and play. There was always something happening, and you would hear that beat and you would run for blocks just to find where the beat was coming from.
Wow. Were you always playing keys?
No. I started on drums. That's why I was so fascinated with go-go.
Oh.
It wasn't really a lot of room for keyboard players once I got in there. That's why I morphed into jazz. But, I mean, as a keyboard player, you could play parts, you know, you could play songs and what have you, but I wanted to stretch, you know. I wanted to play over the changes and solo and improvise and make stuff up on the moment and conduct the band and change up. They're like, no, buddy, that's not no way. You know, so even in my own band, that became a problem. So,
oh, my.
You know, that, yeah, it's very formatted. If you do it the raw way, now, the way I'm doing it now, I'm older. Mm-hmm. I've had my experiences. I've traveled. And, in fact, I'm working on an album that is basically going to talk about the same interview we're having now, my beginnings, and what gave me the fascination and the pure drive and lust for music, you know, and the passion for it. It helped me raise my family, so I got to pay homage to it.
Yeah. Nice. So you're talking about this project. Now that you brought it up, what stage is it in at this point?
It's in a very, very fetal stage. It's in the research stage.
Okay.
I'm rehearsing people, finding the right energies to be a part of it, you know. So I've been traveling to D.C., checking out different guys and different musicians that are down to contribute and just seeing what and where we can find by just getting together.
Mm-hmm.
I have a repertoire that I'm considering formatting for this project, and it spans basically the soundtrack of my life. And these are the songs that affected me, songs that moved me, songs that I heard when things happened, you know, big moments in my life. So I'll be celebrating that catalog,
In
a go-go fashion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I want to go back to Let 'Em Play, and that was a city-run public arts program. What are your thoughts about programs such as that, since there don't seem to be as many right now?
Well, you know, it's a sad state of affairs, the way things went, because not long after I enjoyed that bit of opportunity, it was soon not available, you know. So having that and then watching it go away, I've been pretty much tracking what's happened since then. And I noticed that electronic music has become much more the path people go, something that you could push a button and get something happening quick. The craft of being a musician, people still want to be musicians, but there's no blanket statement that I could say. But I can say it's affected the accessibility for young musicians to have access to at an early age without having to pay for private teachers and things like that. Having access to make a choice, a lifestyle choice, you know. And they teach you in school that you can learn how to follow directions and work for somebody, but they're not teaching you how to be self-sufficient, how to develop your spiritual self, your artistic self, which these are the things that make you human.
Right.
So I feel like there's definitely a mission to block out those sensibilities in us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it early enough, then mine is already calcified by the time you even think about why I didn't do something artistic with my life, you know.
Mm.
I feel sad about it. That's why I really teach my children. I share everything with my children. Mm. You know?
Your children play instruments?
Yeah, my son's a guitarist and a keyboardist and a producer, as well as my daughter's a vocalist. And she could be a lot of things, but I think her strongest point is a vocalist.
Oh, okay.
And writer, you know. Yeah.
I understood you also attempted to open up. Yeah, I was talking to Jana Herzen, and she was telling me how you had attempted to open up. I don't know how to describe it. I guess it's a sort of a venue slash music center.
Yeah, well, I had Langston Hughes' house
right.
for about 2.5 years, myself and a business partner. And we housed Motema Records in that space. As well as we had on the second floor, we had two production studios, which we used for production and also teaching. And we had a performance space on the parlor floor, which was refurbished to kind of suit the way Langston had it when he had it, because they turned it into a rooming house since he was there. So we refurbished that place. And we had a youth orchestra in the performance space, and we did poetry slams and outreach for the community. You know, we had Sunday brunches with the youth playing from the youth orchestra. Yeah, we had a lot of things going on. We had a merchandise room where you could get things from people in the community that were doing things, you know, people that performed there, their albums were housed there.
Wow.
You know, it was a beautiful space. Had an art gallery.
Wow.
Things last for as long as they do. They have their humble beginnings and endings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle, there's always something beautiful there that brings on a memory or something that lasts. And I have some lasting memories from that. I do want to do it again, though. That's a goal of mine.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah.
So back to your time in D.C. It says that you worked with Walter Davis Jr. Did that happen
Walter
once you got to
my
New York?
Teacher.
Oh.
Yeah, he was my teacher. And I met Walter Davis Jr. through Dizzy Gillespie. After they let him play, I went to the Duke Ellington School of the Art. And I was enrolled there and became part of the fabric of that community. And I developed very fast, and that's where a lot of my growth and development came from, the opportunities afforded me by that school. Everything that prepared me to be there was through Let 'Em Play and the go-go bands, but once I was there, I had to get to another level quickly, which was understanding the etiquette of being in the arts, in all the arts, all the disciplines, you know, from creative writing to dance to theater, music, and the business of it, you know. So these things were very much a part of going to that school and being a part of that environment.
Wow.
I went to school with Michelle and Degatello and Sweet Cherie and a bunch of great musicians that are out now my age doing their thing still, you know. But we were taught by doing, you know, and we had incredible young teachers that gave us life and believed in us. People like Wynton Marcellus and Dizzy and just a whole wealth of people came through that school, which gave us exposure to a lifestyle, you can see people who do this, you know, not just talking about it. So that practical sense of being a part of the community, and Blues Alley was a big part of Duke Ellington School of the Arts because it was the jazz performance venue closest, you know.
Okay.
So there was a lot of participation with the school. The artists that came through there would often, because of a woman named Gail Dixon, they would be shuttled up to Duke Ellington to do master classes. So that's how I met everybody. By the time I left that school, I had had enough connections to follow up on once I decided to truly be a musician. And I give thanks for that, you know.
I understand that Dizzy Gillespie heard you playing during a performance of Night in Tunisia, and then you wound up sitting in with him when he was in town.
I would sit in with him afterwards, but I was a part of the Dizzy Gillespie Youth Orchestra, which was housed at Blues Alley.
Okay.
So I was just a member, and every year we get to play with Dizzy at the finale of the year, you know, after all of the practices and the outings that we had. The big thing was Dizzy's anniversary performance at Wolf Trap.
Oh, I see.
So that story goes, at the rehearsal, I was supposed to just comp. I wasn't supposed to take no solo. And so I didn't, but Dizzy heard me noodling on the piano because the band director was specific. He had his boys in there. He wanted to solo. And, you know, my group actually... I was with the Frontline Jazz Ensemble at the time, and we were the actual group that fitted the youth orchestra.
Oh.
So it's an all-black band, and we had Justin Lees, who's a guitar player, white guy, incredible. But we was predominantly a black band. So our drummer, our bass player, me, our saxophone and trombone player were in the band. Like, we just fit right in the band. So we were the rhythm section, and we already had a thing. So we had a vibe, you know.
Right.
But... that the instructor wanted his people to take solos. He had his crew, you know. So, man, when it came time, Dizzy took his break, and then he turned to me to take the solo.
Oh.
And it freaked the band director out, but I was like, damn. I wore that out. I played my ass off. I remember going for everything I could, you know, and Dizzy looked at me and winked. And that was sort of the moment that I felt secure. You know, I felt like, wow, something happened just now. I got acknowledged, you know, and that was a great moment. So I followed Dizzy everywhere he was after that I could be, you know.
Nice.
Hence how I met Walter Davis Jr., because he played with Dizzy.
Okay. You know? He encouraged you to move to New York. How old were you when you decided to actually do that?
Oh, I decided to move to New York pretty much once I outgrew the go-go band.
Oh.
Well, it wasn't outgrew them. It's just that I outgrew my purposefulness in a go-go band, playing chords and holding down the groove. I'm back at that now. That's what I want to do now and with all the other knowledge that I have. But I just needed to get to some other stuff, you know. It's no slight against go-go because every music has its format, you know. Mm-hmm. I was in a jazz format and didn't know it, and that's where I found myself. You know, I wanted to improvise, and I really wanted to know everything about chords, and you know, I wanted to know songs and how to communicate with musicians and like play with different cats on the spot. You know? So, yeah.
You're in New York. You never actually mentioned how old you were.
21 when I came to New York.
Okay.
On my 21st birthday, I moved back.
Oh, wow.
I was on the train on my 21st birthday, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I just needed to get released from home, you know.
Right.
But I had already moved out of home. I had already been taking care of myself since I was 15. So,
okay.
Yeah, I had been out of the house by 15. So.
Oh, okay.
I lived with my brother and a few different people that took very good care of me along the way. Mm-hmm. And I got my first apartment when I was 18 and never looked back.
Okay.
I mean, I look back because I go home all the time. I mean, that was the best thing that ever happened to me because, you know, to teach your teach your child how to take care of themselves is a hard lesson for everybody.
Yes.
It's a hard one. And they did it. They had the strength to say, get out.
And you haven't been back as far as living there. You haven't looked back there.
No, I've been able to support myself.
Right.
You know.
Excellent.
You know, through music and other things. I mean, other things supplemented my musical career at times. You know.
What do you mean by other things? Like what?
Like working at restaurants as a dishwasher, as a cook, as a cleaner, you know, many things, you know.
Yeah. Do you ever drive a cab?
Never drove a cab, but I delivered mail within the hospital up in Columbia. That was a good job because it got me motivated to really practice. That's what I call a good job.
Yes.
One is you're like, I can't do this for the rest of my damn life. I got to keep it moving, you know, get my skills up. So.
Right.
I appreciate that job.
Excellent.
But it got my bank account set up. It got me legally set up here so I could accept checks and be a professional.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a good motivation, you know. Opportunities came, though, right in the middle, and I was like, okay, I'm going for it.
Mm.
You know, I quit.
Like working with Betty Carter.
Working with Betty. But even before Betty, Arthur Taylor called.
Yes.
And Beaver Harris called me.
Yes.
And so I played with these cats, and they were like, man, you know, if you're going to be a musician, at some point you're going to have to be a musician.
Mm.
And being a musician means you deal with everything that goes along with it. No one says you have to suffer. That's why you need to work hard. But if suffering while you work hard to become the best you can be, you know, I mean, everybody got to suffer somewhere. So, you know, just because you have, you know, your pension and your stuff set up doesn't mean you're not suffering going in there every day, you know. So I take that to mean everybody going to suffer doing everything is hard.
Yeah. Well,
everything.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do. Anything is hard. Everything's hard. So, you know, just choose what hard thing you're going to do and do that. You
right.
Know, and don't cry about it.
That's a good one.
That's how I look at it now.
But you mentioned Arthur Taylor and Beaver Harris. That's like two different ends of the spectrum.
Well, that's why I'm so out there, you know, in there.
Yeah.
However you want to look at it. You know, I'm not, I don't turn my nose up at things that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a part of things I like. I know people that call themselves purists but really love other things, but just because they call themselves purists, they have to now stay pure and can't indulge in things that they want to do. So they're bitter. And they look at everybody else having a good time and they're soft. You know, so, you know, I'm not that kind of person at all.
Right. When you had the opportunity to play with these folks, you just played with them, and you played whatever they were doing, or what happened?
Yeah, I mean, they had bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arthur Taylor practiced two times a week, every week. So there was commitments made to developing the sound.
Wait.
I'm
sorry to interrupt you. I have to wait for Mr. Softy to go by.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Are you playing that?
Yeah. I can't think of the melody right now.
Something like that. That's close. Oh, it's gone now.
Okay, here we are.
twice. We
right, right. There was commitment made to developing the sound, and I was playing with older gentlemen who come from a different school of thought, and like if you play in their band, you're in their band. So if you got something else to do, you might not be in the band, you know, that kind of thing. So, but Beaver Harris was beautiful. He turned me on to another spectrum of music, you know. And at that time, I was playing with a lot of great musicians. I mean, there was a lot of development going on here in New York. You had venues like Augie's and Birdland that you could play at all the time, which is now called Smoke.
Right, right.
And the old Birdland that I'm talking about used to be up on 105th Street.
Oh.
106th and Broadway, right next to Smoke, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was a beautiful space that cats could go and play, you know. So there was development ground here, unlike now, you know. The opportunities were more at that point.
So speaking of lack of opportunities, the new place is everybody's basement?
Yeah, simply put, or really it's about community. It's almost come, you know, in a way like as if we live in a place that's really spread out. You got to go somewhere to you know, find the scene now. So, I mean, there's places here, they're venues, but those are performance venues, and that's where, you know, they're trying to turn them seats. But where the community meets, those places are small. You got Smalls.
Right.
And you have Mesero, which is...
Yes.
Same folks, but
yes,
and I appreciate what Mike is doing, Spike. But we need some uptown spots. So I'm working on the spot now. I'll have a weekly. We're still trying to decide whether it's a Wednesday or Thursday now. It'll be at Chez Lucien. It's actually there's a spot called Gin and Fizz opening on the second floor of that space. It's right next to Red Rooster on Lenox Avenue.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Near 125th Street.
Right.
Okay.
Right on the second floor, beautiful space. They just bought a piano for me, so I'm going to be in there every Wednesday or Thursday and developing a sound, and I'm approaching the modern repertoire of the jazz musicians as well as opening up into some new original music of mine. We'll do like a show for an hour, and then we'll open the space up.
Oh, wow. So
late night hang in Harlem.
Okay. So The Cell, you had a residency there. That's an interesting spot.
6 weeks. Yeah, it is a beautiful spot. It's run by some really cool people that trying to, you know, be creative with the space. So it was really a pleasure to present many different formations, you know, in that space over that time period. Which put me back in the frame of mind of the Langston Hughes house, you know.
Mm.
I had a place where I could develop, you know.
Right.
And people would come and, you know, so not only was I developing the sound, but an audience and just a vibe, you know, so I'm looking for that again.
Yeah. And that's where we were introduced, my partner Hank and I, we were introduced to your work with Awo.
Yeah, Awo. Sango, yeah.
Sango. She's
amazing.
Yeah.
Ya Muhammadu. Ya Muhammada, ya kweli ya Muhammad, ya Rasulullah.
Yeah.
What a voice.
Yes, indeed.
And presence.
Yep. The music is so beautiful that in retrospect, after you look back, you end up covering a lot of ground because the musicians come from all over. You know, so that's what makes me one of those kind of musicians that is able to play a lot of different music. And it's nothing to do with ego or like I'm not just a jazz musician. I've actually meet incredible musicians that do other things that I want to be involved in.
Thank you.
Betty Carter. I mentioned her. We didn't really talk about her. How'd you wind up working with her?
Well, Betty, you wind up with Betty because she wants you. Yeah, that's how you end up there. She summons me, and I was prepared.
Okay.
Yeah.
I heard that that she would go to clubs and just see folks, and that's how she wound up with her bandmates.
That's why you had to stay sharp when you're in her band, because she didn't stay home. She was always out seeing who else was out there.
Right.
Never felt secure in her band.
Oh. You
know? And she'll tell you, I went out last night, I saw such and such playing, he sounded good. Like, whoa. Let me call that boy up, let him know. Stay away from my gig. No, you had to stay sharp in that in that band, because your gig was always up for grabs.
Wow.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and you've been listening to a conversation between me and Mark Carey. Mark Carey, pianist, composer, cool guy, arranger, and community person.
Yeah.
If you're a community person and you believe in the continuance of WBAI, you can call 212-209-2950, show your financial support, or go to give2wbai.org. What you're listening to right now is African Market. This is from Roads Ahead, Volume 2. Mark Carey on Fender Rhodes, Taurus Mateen on bass, Tyrion Gully on drums, Samir Gupta on tabla, Daniel Moreno on percussion. This is a 2015 Motema Records release. Before this, we heard Open the Door, 90, from Betty Carter. This is from Dropping Things. Betty Carter on vocals, Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, Craig Handy on tenor saxophone, Mark Carey on piano, Taurus Mateen on bass, Gregory Hutchinson on drums. And this is a 1990 Verve Records release. Before that, we heard The Giver from Mark Carey Focus Trio and Friends. Cosmic Indigenous is the name of this project. Awa Sango on vocals, Igmar Thomas on trumpet, Mark Carey keyboards and synthesizer, Daniel Moreno on percussion, Samir Gupta tabla and drums, Rashawn Carter on bass, Arun Ramamuthi on violin. Got this from Bandcamp.com, BANDCAMP.com, the 2004 release. And before that, we heard Black is Back, BLAK is Back, from Abstract Black. That's ABSTRAKT. Black, BLAK, from Mark Carey and Sean Chance Miller. This is a Crossroads XR project, the 2007 Motema Records release. Before that, we heard Asoria Walks. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Asoria Walks from Mark Carey's Roads Ahead Volume 2 project. And as mentioned, this is a 2015 Motema Records release. Before that, we heard our theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from Nina Simone. Stay tuned. On the Bandstand is coming up next as we continue to listen to African Market and more Mark Carey after a station break. Don't forget, 212-209-2950. Show your support or go to give2wbai.org. Stay tuned.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for May 17th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. And this show features pianist and keyboardist Mark Carey. You can catch him leading off late-night jam sessions on May 21st and 28th at Harlem's Gin Fizz Lounge at 125th and Malcolm X Boulevard. And we have more music for you this week. Saxophonist Oliver Lake's visual art exhibit of his painted sticks is on view at the Algiera Center for Contemporary Art in downtown Newark, New Jersey, until the 21st. Details are at algiera.org, that's algiera.org. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at Minton's on Mondays in May with Sharonie Wade Septet. Pianist and vocalist Diane Shore is at Birdland from May 19th to 23rd. Bassist Mimi Jones joins Louis Perdomo's ensemble at Smoke on the 20th. Saxophonist Ravi Coltrane is a special guest with Fred Hirsch at the Jazz Standard on the 22nd. Saxophonist Kenny Garrett is at Iridium from the 22nd to the 24th. Saxophonist Gary Bartz takes part in a celebration of Miles Davis's music at Smoke from the 22nd to the 24th. Bassist Reggie Workman is interviewed live at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem on the 26th. Saxophonist Oliver Lake is at Zinc Bar with Francisco Mora Catlett's Afro Horn on the 28th. Harpist Brandy Younger will be at the Cell Theater on May 30th and June 13th. Pianist and vocalist Andy Bay is at Minton's on the 30th and 31st, and drummer Bobby Sanabria leads Quartetto Ache at Floridita Restaurant at 125th Street on May 31st. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. You can find playlists and audio from this and previous shows on our main website as well. And if you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. It's especially important right now as we're in the middle of our spring pledge drive. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday the 31st. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on The Bandstand.
And we'd like to thank Hank Williams, our associate producer for On the Bandstand. As he mentioned, we are scheduled to be here on May 31st. That could change as a result of the fund drive and programs being preempted. We've been preempted before. It could happen again. But we need to hear from you at 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, or give the number to WBAI.org. Show your support. Give as much as you can. Give as little as you can. Just give to keep WBAI on the air if you appreciate Sugar My Bowl and other arts programming and everything else that is still on WBAI. We've grown a bit. So we'd like to continue to grow and give you what you would like. 212-209-2950 and give the number to WBAI.org. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and our guest, Mark Carey.
Listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio and online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
having worked with Betty, that's how you wound up working with Abby Lincoln?
No.
Oh. So how'd that happen?
I think possibly my reputation, but they're two different people. They don't have the same taste.
No.
I just happen to be malleable enough to work with two extremely different kind of vocalists, divas.
Uh-huh. You said divas?
Maybe the word got out that I know how to work with divas or something. I don't know, but, truthfully speaking, Abby was more an aunt to me way before I even became a part of her group.
Oh.
She lived next door to Arthur Taylor.
Okay.
So, like I said, we rehearsed twice a week, and Arthur was like an uncle. He lived two buildings from me. He and Abby lived next door to each other, two buildings away from me. So they were in my community, like right there, you know.
Nice.
I'd pass her coming in and out of the building. I'd see her like a phantom jumping into a limousine, taking off for years.
Uh-huh.
I was always in awe of her. So she saw me develop as a musician. I would run errands for her, you know, things they needed. I'd go get it. I was like a runner in a sense at some point. Not like they didn't treat me like that, but mm-hmm. I was available.
Sure.
I'm young, I'm available, and I was hungry mm-hmm. for knowledge. So I would hang out with them. But the other musicians would go home. I would be there after the gig, you know, after the rehearsals, talking about whatever.
And so you did that for, what, 10 years? 12 years?
12 years of Abby, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, that's like working with your aunt, me like my aunt or something, you know. And so we had our ups and downs. There would be times within those 12 years I wasn't in the band.
Mm-hmm.
But my time with her, you know, lasted 12 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I got fired from that band about 3 or 4 times. And rehired.
Right.
You know, so the first time I got fired from her band, she told me, Mark, you're always available, you know. You're not supposed to be available all the time. Your price goes up when you're not available. I was I need to die. That's knowledge. Like, my dumb ass, I'm always available because I don't want to miss nothing.
Right.
And soon the day that I said I can't make your gig because I got my own, she fired me.
Oh.
She said, okay, you're fired. I was like, wow. Well, wait a minute. So I lasted a year, and that's when Brandon McCune got in the band.
Oh, okay.
For that time period. And then she fired him and called me back.
Okay. So you weren't just her pianist. You were also her arranger?
Well, I arranged some things. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself her arranger at all. She did all her own songs. Yeah. She wrote her songs.
Yes.
You know,
she had that huge book.
Yeah.
That loose leaf binder. That massively huge book.
Yeah, she wrote lyrics to one of my songs, Running Out of Time. I haven't recorded it yet.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I thought that was a good segue. That means you have to record it. surprised you didn't put it on the tribute recording that you did for Abby Lincoln.
Yeah, well, that one needs the lyric. People have to hear the lyric first before they understand it. I mean, the instrumental's already been recorded.
Oh, okay.
To that song. She heard that song and was like, oh my God, this is perfect. Mm. Running out of time. Yeah. The part of the line goes, time is the distance between this and that. Love is forever. Forever is never. Mm. Oh man, I was like, oh, shoot. Woo. Yeah, Abby's something else. She still exists to me. I still got her number in my book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I can't erase it.
I hear that.
Yeah. 678-9438.
That's a very rhythmic number, too, so.
Yeah, I know it is. I'll never forget that number.
when you recorded Carry On, mm-hmm. how did you get that opportunity? What brought that about?
Well, that was brought to me by Russ Musto, who's an incredible... You know Russ?
I've seen him around all the time. He is everywhere.
Yeah, Russ Musto is one of those unsung heroes in the community who's always in support of what cats are doing. I think at one point he had a little bit more power mm-hmm. or ability to make moves, but... Mm-hmm. I think at the time that I met him was through hanging around Art Blakey and playing with Betty and Arthur Taylor and Abby. I became part of, like, you know, the scene, a big part of the scene. And so I wanted to do my own record years before I got to that, but I think the time came when I recorded the record with A.T., Mr. A.T., on Indra Records. And that gave me an opportunity to present something, you know. And so Russ was my broker. He helped me broker the deal.
Wow.
And so we recorded it first mm-hmm. and then presented it to Andrew.
Nice.
And that's how I got on. But he financed it.
Oh, wow.
Which is a big deal.
Well, go Russ.
I mean, he and I both financed it. I put my own money up too, but mm-hmm. he paid the guys and I paid for the mastering and different things like that, you know. Mm. And then we sent it to them and leased it to Andrew. I'm trying to get that back now, still, you know, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's always some kind of stuff, you know.
That was going to be my next question. It's like, is what you've recorded yours?
Well, most of it, yeah. Okay. I own most of my product. I mean, there's several records that, because you're dealing with the old school format of getting over on musicians, you know, mm-hmm. and making it difficult. So we just, you know, it's a process, but we're pulling all of our stuff together for the estate, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you're recording, on your recordings, you have, I guess, everybody that you've ever encountered in New York. But you started with, I guess, a foundation of Nasheed Waitz and Taurus Mateen?
Not really. That was later. I started with Dion Parson and Dwayne Berno as my rhythm section.
Okay.
Yeah.
The late Dwayne Berno.
Yeah, the late Dwayne Berno, my good friend. He and Dion did my first record. Mm-hmm. And that was a beautiful thing because we had been developing that sound for years, since 88 or something. Well, Dwayne came a little later, but I met Dion pretty much around a little after I got to New York. Mm-hmm. And he and I developed the trio and the septet. Well, I developed it, but he was the drummer that did the heavy lifting, as drummers do. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first trio in New York. And that then went into Nasheed and Taurus.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've pretty much been with them I guess until you expand into other forms that you express, like a Focus Trio.
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't spend too much time with Nasheed and Taurus because thanks to my good friend Jason, he was able to help feed their family. So
Jason
at
Moran.
At the time, I didn't have to... Yeah, they went with Jason in a band called The Bandwagon.
Yes.
Thank you.
I mentioned Focus Trio. How did you wind up working with Samir Gupta and I know his name, Carter, Rashawn Carter.
Yeah, Rashawn.
Yes.
Well, yeah, to start with the latter, Rashawn came along. The group started off with David Yule, myself, mm-hmm. and Samir Gupta. Mm-hmm. David Yule started a family, or grew his family even bigger, and needed to go in another format. He chipped off, leaving us to find a proper bass for the chair. We went through a few bass players that I love, Tyrus, Burness, and Rashawn found himself as the chair holder because of his love for being a part of the music and also his commitment to it, you know, and his incredible sensibility as a musician. So that's pretty much how it happened. But, you know, I think it word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Samir was recommended to me.
Okay.
Rashawn, I knew because his father gave me my first gig, so I knew him since he was a baby stroller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And who's his father?
Well, that doesn't mean nothing because he turned into a great musician. I hadn't seen him for years. And then one day I heard him play, and they said, you know, that's Russell's son. I was like, get the hell out of here. That's Russell Carter's son? Then it was like, it's my duty in a way, you know, to play with this cat. And okay. He sounds so good that my duty and his abilities hooked up.
Wow. And yeah. He plays acoustic and electric. As a matter of fact,
oh, yeah.
when we saw you at Harlem Stage for the Abby Lincoln tribute, there were like two nights I think you did there. And uh-huh. And Rashawn was playing. He was playing acoustic, he had the electric slung over his back.
It oh, was funny.
Like he was ready.
yep, that's it, man.
Wow. And
got
Samir
to stay
Gupta,
ready.
Yo, yep. Man. And Samir Gupta was just, that's the first time I heard him, so I was just in awe of his playing.
Yeah, Samir is ridiculous, yeah. He's one of the most giving musicians that I've ever played with. He committed himself to developing his group by even moving from California to New York, you know.
Wow.
So that's a true committed cat, and that's why we've been able to develop this group the way we have. There was a period where we really rehearsed all the time, and now it's a little bit more organic unless we're developing a new thing, you know. So, but yeah, that's been a great ride. 15 years.
Wow.
With that. Yeah.
Roads Ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is available. The volume 2 has been released.
Yeah.
And that's some bad stuff there. I mean, it's in having heard the first one, which was, you know, that was a surprise. Well, not a complete surprise, because I've heard you. But and you go places. But the second one, it's like you're really coming into what you're trying to say with the roads.
Yep. I really found a beautiful... You know, the thing about recording is that you can document a stage, you know? So that recording, to me, documented a new point of awareness for me. And that's kind of like what I like my records to do. That's why I don't put a record out every year unless I have something to say. I've skipped years here and there. Generally, I've been pretty fluid. But for this project specifically, since it's a volume 2, and it wasn't an introduction to a new thing, it was like a recap or the next chapter. I really wanted it to be impactful, and I wanted it to show growth, like development, like in a book, you know, you start and then you get to the next thing and then something else happens, you know, so that was really my mission, and I'm glad that, you know, from your statement, that's the first thing that seems to have come off, so I appreciate that.
Nice. And the
Indigenous people?
Yes, Indigenous people. And that seems to be an even further declaration of what could be done on roads.
Oh, yeah. Well, Cosmic Indigenous.
Cosmic Indigenous,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Cosmic Indigenous. Because you got... See, Cosmic Indigenous is the satellite group of Indigenous people.
Okay.
Which is, to me, more my zone where I can play go-go and go into some head nodding stuff, you know.
Okay.
But Cosmic Indigenous takes me to the cosmic zone. That's I'm dealing with, you know, the ethnics, the Indigenous rhythms and Indigenous sounds from everywhere. That's the concept. But yeah, I was able to dig into that roads on that one.
Mm.
You know.
By the way, are you still playing?
There's no piano on that record.
Oh.
Thank you.
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Right now we're listening to Starchild, and that is from Cosmic Indigenous, Mark Carey Focus Trio and Friends. Before that we heard When I See You, I See Me from Indigenous People. The release is titled Unite, Mark Carey on Fender Rhodes, Rogue Moog Synth and Piano, Taurus Mateen on bass guitar, Camille Gaynor on drums, and Yarborough Charles Laws on congas, flute, and bass, clarinet, also percussion, Marvin Sewell on electric guitar. That's a 2001 Jazzeteria release. Before that, we heard Below the Equator from Roads Ahead, Mark Carey's latest release, Roads Ahead Volume 2. And before that, we heard Ready or Not, Mark Carey Focus Trio from Four Directions, Mark Carey on piano, Samir Gupta on drums, tabla, Rashawn Carter on bass. Before that, we heard The Afterthought, Mark Carey, Carry On is the name of the release. That's a 1995 Enju Records release. That's Mark Carey on piano, Roy Hargrove on trumpet, Ron Blake on tenor sax, Dwayne Burno, the late Dwayne Burno on bass, Dion Parson on drums, and Yarborough Charles Laws on flute. Before that, we heard Running Out of Time, Mark Carey from Listen, his release Listen, that's 2006 Arabesque Records. Mark Carey on piano, Ron Blake on tenor sax, Billy Johnson on bass, Yarborough Charles Laws on flute, percussion, Daniel Moreno on percussion as well, Dion Parson on drums, and Terrell Stafford on trumpet. Before that, we heard For Moseka, Mark Carey's solo piano from For the Love of Abby, his tribute to Abby Lincoln, from a 2013 Motema Records release. And what we're going to hear after Starchild is Love What You're Doing from Abby Lincoln. We'll be getting ready for La Nueva Alternativa. By the way, that's Abby Lincoln on vocals, Mark Carey on piano, Oliver Lake, another former Sugar guest, on alto sax, Steve Coleman, a future Sugar guest, I hope, on alto sax, Riley T. Bandy III on alto sax, Michael Bowie on bass, and Alvester Garnett on drums. And as I mentioned, La Nueva Alternativa will be coming up after Abby Lincoln. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Please continue to show your support at 212-209-2950 and give the number to WBAI.org on the web. See you in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned.
Still playing with Cindy Blackman? Santana?
I'll probably always play with Cindy at some point. When I'm not in her band.
Okay.
We collaborated different times in our lives, you know.
Okay.
You caught us at a time when we were getting down.
Yeah.
So, you know. But, you know, I've known Cindy and Wallace. They were why I came to New York. Cindy and Wallace and Walter all pretty much hit me at the same time. We're like, bring your ass to New York. Walter was like, you ain't gonna learn how to play piano sitting in D.C. Cindy and Wallace were like, we got a spot for you in the band.
Mm.
Antoine Roney was like, I got a crib for you that you could stay at and a job. So,
all right.
You know, and then my big thing was to find my father. So I came back here with a mission. And was pretty much supported. I only stayed at Antoine's house for a week before I found my own apartment. So.
Oh, well, okay.
You know. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, mm-hmm. considering you were, like, moving around at 15, so.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, they were proud of me, too. He's like, man, out of all the cats that I offered that to, you're the only cat that I didn't have to kick out.
Mm, wow.
And I was like, yeah, man. Because it was so hard to stay there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was like motivated to get a place.
And
that cat would have me. He would tell me to leave the house, which I think is brilliant. He said, "Leave the house when we leave in the morning."
Oh yeah, yeah. So you're not hanging out, just
yeah. I don't care what
out.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't be in the house while we're at work. I was like, wow. Okay.
I mean, that's pretty much what parents do.
Exactly. Yeah, get your ass out the house. Go find something to do. Don't get in no trouble.
Uh-huh.
Be home by 6. Mm-hmm.
Working with Will Calhoun.
That's my man.
Is that continuing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we'll always work together.
Oh, I'm glad.
I mean, at this point, I'm developing my career in my groups, which takes a bit of separation to do.
Uh-huh.
Because, especially with this industry, it's not like it used to be. You can't develop your stuff and be in somebody else's group now.
Right.
The pot's still the same size, and there's a lot of people in it. So people want to make sure that this and that and the whole lineage of going through a group is not popping no more. They're picking cats right out of the high school now. So
yeah.
My whole story, thanks to people like you, it's going to stay alive, but nobody's really concerned about that kind of stuff. They barely remember Abby or Betty.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
It's been but a couple years, and so I'm old hat in that regard. Like, the way I came through the music, cats don't do no more because the opportunity's not really there, and also the ones that are there, they're not taking them serious like that unless they're in the institution. So you know, it's another format. It's another crew coming in.
Right. Actually, I tend to have difficulty with a lot of newer folks coming out because they don't take the time to develop. Or it doesn't seem, it's like they came out great. They came through the Thelonious Monk Institute. They won some competition. And now they want to be leaders.
Yes, a lot of examples of that. No sense in talking about it, but that's what's happening. That's the format. You win the competition and you get the record deal. You know, so no more community. And that's why you can't get the support of the community, because these are not the people that are voting you in. They're like, I didn't even know you was in. Who put you in there? Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know. He's the top guy. Really? I thought that, you know.
Well, I got to say, the initial thing that we wound up going in this direction, it was you're playing with Will Calhoun, and I'm glad that you still do that.
And, I really love him. He's a great musician. He's trying to cut his teeth in the jazz world after being in the rock world for so long, you know.
Yeah. Y'all sound so great
jazz,
together, too.
You know? Yeah. It's really fun playing with him.
Were you involved in Oliver Lake's big band?
Well, I played on his record.
Oh, on Wheels.
Yeah.
Okay. But
I'm not in the big band, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Did you derive anything from that experience, or...?
Oh, hell yeah. First of all, I love Oliver Lake. I think his whole family is incredible. There's great musicians in that family.
Uh-huh.
But, I derived quite a bit. I also got a chance to record with him with Abby, so that was my second time really getting to hang with Oliver, you know.
Oh, wait a minute. When did you and Abby record with Oliver Lake?
What record was that? It was one of them.
Okay, that's all right. I'll find. Well, Mark Carey, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl and spending all this time with us. I'm really appreciative.
It's my pleasure.
I look forward to seeing you soon. Actually, when is the Roads Ahead coming back? Because I know I missed you at
Ginny's,
yeah.
We're working on some New York dates now.
Okay.
I'll post it.
Okay, and then we'll announce it. Because you are
indeed.
Now
thank you
another
so much.
Official Sugar guest. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Okay, you too, Joe.
Thanks.
Love, what you doing down there? Love, what you doing down there? Oh, love. What you doing down there? Did you go all the way just following the stream? Did you run to capture something from a dream? I'm coming for to get you. Never mind the tears, 'cause you've always been mine.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.